Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Roto World Baseball Podcast. I'm DJ Short, and with me here, as always, is Drew Silva. Originally, I think we were thinking this was going to be a pitching-focused episode. At least that was the idea, since that was a lot of the activity so far this offseason. But there's been quite a bit of news this week. We're recording Wednesday night. There's been quite a bit of news, some player-related, some front office-related. It's certainly not boring right now in the baseball world. We can say that.
Yeah, a lot of major headlines. Usually this week, right after awards season, is one of the slowest weeks of the on the baseball calendar. It's right before, you know, free agency kind of gets into full swing. But a lot of different headlines, a lot of front office moves. We can talk quickly about Theo Epstein stepping down from his role as Cubs president. I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting and refreshing that he admitted on his Zoom call with the media on Tuesday that, you know, he's had a lot of success in building organizations. Like, two of the most famous building operations in baseball history, or at least recent baseball history, with the Red Sox and Cubs, given their previous championship droughts before he came aboard. But he admitted that he's had trouble with the maintaining part, or that he maybe just like wasn't quite as motivated by it, maintaining that success that he built initially. But I mean, with, you know, 2004 and 2007 in Boston, and then, you know, the Cubs in 2016, where they were before that, where they've been since then, I think his legacy is undeniable, and I think he was probably being too humble. The Cubs have some tough decisions ahead with their position player core all nearing free agency at the same time, and their payroll already sitting in the top three of all MLB teams right now. But to get the one World Series in Chicago, and then, you know, to have the Cubs make the playoffs five out of his last six seasons there, I think Theo obviously has nothing to hang his head about and is going to be sought after by a large range of teams in baseball and probably even in other sports or industries. Whenever he decides to return to an executive position, it sounds like he's just going to hang out with his family in 2021, which he deserves that break.
Yeah, he could do whatever he wants to do at this point in his career. And two great runs, the Red Sox, the Cubs, breaking those long droughts. I mean, he's already Cooperstown bound. So he can really take his time and make his decision. You know, when it was announced he was stepping down, I think the immediate speculation was like, the Mets, I know the Phillies are looking for a team president as well, but, you know, given the money that Steve Cohen has to work with, there was immediate speculation about that. Seems like that's unlikely to occur. And I think the Mets want to make a quick decision here so they can get the rest of their offseason going, because they have quite a bit of moves that they could make. They could be front and center in a lot of the major transactions and signings this offseason. So I don't think they're going to want to wait out a Theo situation, whether he's going to, you know, be with an organization next year. I think it's probably unlikely. Looking long-term with Theo, though, I think the next step, if he does stay in baseball, you know, people are thinking maybe he could get like an ownership stake somewhere. And I've even seen speculation like he'd be the perfect commissioner for Major League Baseball in the long-term. Either of those things are perfectly feasible. I mean, he's still a relatively young man for all he's accomplished. I think he's in his mid to late 40s. I think he might be 46 or something crazy like that. So, you know, he still has a long career ahead of him if whatever he wants to do next. So it's going to be fascinating to see that.
He did have some interesting comments about the way baseball is played right now and his hand in that, you know, going a little too into the analytics. I mean, I had the exact quote pulled up, but might have closed the tab. In general, though, he was talking about how it's become like a three true outcome sport, a homer, a strikeout, or a walk, with not enough balls put in play, not showcasing the athleticism of the athletes who choose to play baseball and how that has hurt the draw of the sport and the entertainment value of the sport. I hear those comments. I'm like, that sounds like a guy who wants to be commissioner one day, or a guy who wants to get out of the sport entirely. Or maybe he was just like in a mood where he was relaxed and sharing his honest thoughts and being reflective after the end of a great tenure in Chicago. That's probably the more likely situation. I don't really think that he's gunning for anything right now, unless he's got some strategy up his sleeve.
I feel like he's kind of reflecting like a lot of, you know, baseball analysts are doing right now, at least as far as baseball Twitter is concerned. When I remember when, you know, Twitter first came out in 2009, it was a lot about like maximizing your roster. Everybody, you know, sort of looked at the Rays as like the model, like locking up their young prospects. Sometimes, you know, when they just first debut, like Evan Longoria, that contract. But now we kind of look at it a little bit differently. So I think just the way that the front offices are perceived has changed, because I think there's a difference between the game being optimized and being entertaining. And I think there's a fine line there, and baseball needs to figure that out, you know, if they want to compete with the NFL and the NBA for the long term.
Yep. Another big, we had a few of them. The Angels hired Perry Manassian as their general manager. He spent the last three seasons as an assistant in the Braves front office, worked for the Blue Jays for 9 years before that. Glowing reports about his baseball intellect and communication skills. And his dad was a longtime clubhouse manager for the Rangers, so he's been around major leaguers all of his life. I think two of his brothers also work in baseball. Kind of an interesting situation with the Angels, like a team that's not afraid to spend big money, but, you know, has gotten Mike Trout into one playoff series. I think the best record they had under Billy Epler, the former general manager, was 80-82, which is just, yeah, when you have Trout around, it's just, and the money they spend, I mean, they're always top third in payroll. I think it's good that they have a new voice there and hopefully can do something and find some way to get some pitching into Anaheim.
Yeah, hopefully. And of course, the big move here, just fascinating, you know, history making, whatever you want to call it, Kim Ng, the new general manager of the Miami Marlins, the first woman and Asian American to be a general manager in baseball, the first woman to be a general manager in any of the professional North American sports, the four major ones, but really long overdue, given her history in the game, almost three decades, starting out with the White Sox as an intern, worked for the Yankees and the Dodgers, you know, two of the best organizations in baseball, if not all of sports. And for the better part of the past decade, she's worked in the commissioner's office, senior VP of operations for Major League Baseball over the past several years. So, you know, her background really couldn't be disputed here. So just really cool to see that finally recognized. I feel like, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, working for Roto World and NBC. And it felt like every time a GM opening would come up, you know, her name would be there in the conversation, but it just never happened. And when this opening came about, and I think there was a couple of days ago where I heard maybe they were considering somebody outside the box. Like, I wasn't even thinking her name, to be honest. But it's nice to finally see that come to fruition.
Yeah, I was thinking like someone from the corporate world. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's, like you said, has worked in baseball since the mid-90s, climbed up the ladder, had previously interviewed for GM openings with the Mariners, Padres, Angels, and Giants that we know of. There could have been others.
Sure.
Yeah, the resume is way more impressive than a lot of Ivy League bros who have gotten GM jobs in much shorter time. She is
totally
overqualified, if anything. And
yeah, that's kind of what I was saying. Like when I was hearing that with the Marlins, I was thinking, like, does she even need to be a GM? Like she's so, like, she did feel overqualified.
Yeah. And if she has a great shot at achieving a lot of success in Miami. We talked about the Marlins, like, I think more than any other podcast, just because we kind of knew that they would be better quicker than a lot of people expected because they have that pitching. And they made the playoffs in 2020. A lot of position player talent coming through the pipeline. I love it. I think it was a great day for the sport when she got hired. And it's awesome that this wasn't just some hollow move, like win the headlines kind of thing. She was hired on full merit. We talked about the resume. She'll be making real decisions with an on-field impact, which is just, it's just great for women. And again, I think it's great for baseball, and I think she's in a great position to put a real successful stamp on the team there in Miami. I think they're going to be pretty good for a pretty long time.
And I think there's going to be a good streamlined decision-making tree there with Derek Jeter, who she has a relationship with, Don Mattingly as well. So she has a background with all of them. I think it's going to work really great, and I look forward to seeing where that goes. And the NL East is going to be really interesting next year. Like I said earlier, the Mets and the Phillies still looking for candidates for their team president roles. The Mets were denied permission to talk to David Stearns, the president of the Brewers. He's one of the youngest GMs in the game, if not the youngest. I guess he's a president now. He got promoted about a year ago, I believe. But he grew up a Mets fan. There's been that speculation for a long time, but that's not going to happen. Mike Chernoff, the Indians general manager, he seems to be a very strong candidate. He's turned down a chance to talk to the Mets before, two off seasons ago, when they hired Brody Van Wagenen. But it seems like maybe it could happen this time. I think the issue that both the Mets and the Phillies are running into is that, you know, teams are shooting them down because, at least on a couple of occasions that we know of, because teams don't want to let their executives go for what would be a lateral move. Like if they were a GM and they were going to take a team president role, well, that's understandable. But if you're, you know, if you're taking somebody's team president to be a team president elsewhere, like owners aren't going to necessarily go for that. So I think that's been why there's been a bit of a delay with the Phillies and the Mets to this point. But, you know, with this offseason about to unfold, even though it's going to be slow, obviously you want to get this in place because you got to hire a GM too.
You know, the when Jeff Luhnow sued the Astros like a couple weeks ago, that gave us a window finally into what top executives were making. Like he still had $24 million, I believe, left on his – or 21 left on his contract, which I think – would have been 2 years. I mean, that's a lot of money for an executive. So if you're the Indians who seem like so committed to cutting costs and Chernoff's making probably not 12 million a year like Luhnow, but maybe like upwards of 5 or 6, maybe you dump them and hire some economics major out of, you know, Yale to take the job at a cheaper rate. It could be a cost cutting measure that they would be okay with this winter as they talk about trading Francisco Lindor.
And we should say about the Cubs too, with Theo Epstein leaving, he had basically, I believe, a $10 million salary. Mm-hmm. So during an off season when the Cubs are expected to cut costs, maybe cut ties with a player or two, maybe start a rebuild. We'll see what's going to happen there with Jed Hoyer in charge. But at the bottom line, you know, you got to hope that some of the team employees, front office employees, baseball operations, you know, whomever, get taken care of here. We'll have to see what happens there. You know, today we even heard the Dodgers are laying off some employees, which is strange.
Yeah.
Very strange. Yeah. But we're going to cover a ton of pitching stuff here soon. Before we do that, we're going to get into the big news of the day, Wednesday, and that's Robinson Cano suspended for the second time in his career for performance-enhancing drugs, and he's going to forfeit his entire $24 million salary for next season, suspended for the entire 2021 season. I guess it's surprising. I mean, he has been suspended before, but to get caught again, and especially with a drug that I think is, at least based off of, you know, what I've heard since this suspension came out, that a very easy drug to detect. So just The other thing is that it torpedoes his potential Hall of Fame candidacy in the long term. Cano coming off a year that he was very productive, hit 316 with 10 homers and an 896 OPS in 49 games this past season. But now he's wiped out for 2021. He's still owed $24 million in 2022 and 2023, believe it or not. So that Brody Van Wagenen deal with the Mariners, which always already looks terrible, you know, just looking worse and worse. But as far as the Mets are concerned, I really don't think this is the worst thing in the world for them because they do have quite a bit of flexibility. They get that money back that they would have paid Cano, which I believe is $20.25 million. Jeff McNeil could slide to second base. They have a lot of variables in the air about what they could do this offseason with that money that they saved there. But also you could put JD Davis at third base. You know, you could actually sign DJ LeMahieu and have him play second base and move Jeff McNeil back to third. There's just so many things that they could do this offseason. So as far as the Mets are concerned, I really don't think this is the worst thing in the world for them because they have so much flexibility.
Colton Wong, maybe too. I mean, if you want to improve the defense there, I know they're trying to get a little more right-handed.
Yes, he's
a lefty, but if you just want a guy who can play a very good second base, Wong is on the market. TJ Quinn, who covers a lot of the performance-enhancing drug stories for ESPN, especially around baseball, was tweeting earlier today. He tweeted, "I can almost guarantee there's going to be a whale of a story behind this. Cano is rich enough to afford drugs and regimens that would easily escape detection. Taking Stanzolol is bonkers. Poor kids take it, not bazillionaires." And, you know, especially for a guy in Cano who's already been caught before, you'd think he'd want to hide it better. I think there's more to this story. He didn't appeal the suspension, though. So he obviously feels at fault in some way. I know that beat writers were all tweeting that MLB really kind of relaxed the PED testing this year because of all that was going on with COVID. You're having to test these guys daily or every other day for COVID. So they didn't test as much for performance enhancing drugs. Maybe Cano found that like
loophole.
Yeah. Thought like, hey, maybe I can get away with this. And he did have a good year and was hoping to kind of keep staying productive as he approaches age 40. But yeah, I mean, his Hall of Fame legacy is tarnished. He threw away $36 million. I don't know. It's a strange story to me, but you're right. I think it could prove to be a blessing for the Mets, especially under new ownership as they're trying to kind of reorganize and spend money in the right way. Maybe they just wind up eating that $48 million that he's
I think they might. I really do, because the roster is built for you know, more flexibility, especially if they do keep the DH in the National League. Like, they might have been forced to put Cano in the DH spot eventually, you know, at least to keep him a little fresh, because he has had some, you know, injuries here and there that have cost him some time over the past couple of years, 3 years, really. But of course, they have Dom Smith there. They have Pete Alonso there. They have JD Davis there. You know, none of them are necessarily really strong defenders. So, you know, kind of getting them out of the mix there, I think, is actually beneficial for them. The Mets have been linked to Marcell Ozuna this week, which I think is weird because they don't actually have a GM and president yet. And Ozuna is another one of those players that would just be like in a log jam with all these, you know, DH kind of bats. Ideally, he wouldn't be in the outfield for a team at this point. So I found that a little curious, but I think Mets fans in general, just to hear them connected to all the top names on the market, that's a very good thing. And if anything, it's just showing that they're looking at all options. I think it's more likely the Mets sign George Springer than they do Marcell Ozuna. But it's still interesting to see. And I think it's still more likely they sign like a Trevor Bauer than a DJ LeMahieu. But we'll have to see where it goes. And it's an exciting time to be a Mets fan, you know, even with this news.
I'm happy for you, DJ.
It's an exciting time to be a Dayton Flyers fan, too.
Yeah, Obi Toppin, number 8 overall to the New York Knicks. That's cool. It's not. It's rare that Dayton has like a lottery pick.
Yeah, he actually went to high school like 15 miles from my house.
Wow.
In Ossining.
I knew he was a New York native. That's why he was so excited to get drafted by the Knicks.
That doesn't happen often. So at least, especially not recently.
Right.
But no, it should be interesting. He certainly has a personality for New York. That's for sure.
Yeah. One big news item this week that doesn't have to do with PEDs or front office searches or hot stove activity is that Cody Bellinger underwent surgery on Tuesday to stabilize the right shoulder that he dislocated while celebrating his go-ahead seventh inning home run in the Dodgers NLCS Game 7 win over the Braves. That was back on October 18th. He did that like jump arm hook hybrid high five thing that you'll see in baseball and other sports. And the shoulder just popped out when he made contact with, I believe it was Enrique Hernandez. Yeah. Bellinger didn't wind up missing any of the World Series, played in all six of those games as the Dodgers ultimately beat the Rays, but he did go 3-for-22 in those six games, which works out to a 136 batting average. One of those three hits was a two-run homer in game one. So in general, like everything seemed fine, but then came the news that he needed surgery ultimately. The hope is that he can resume baseball activities in about 4 to 6 weeks and be fully recovered within 10 weeks, which is a timeline that would have him on track to be ready for the start of spring training in February. Shoulder issues are scary on the surface. They can linger, and the surgeries don't have the success rate that you get with an elbow or a forearm or a wrist. But this wasn't a labrum repair or a thoracic outlet type of deal. And I think Bellinger should be 100% leading into 2021, or at least the regular season. Maybe he sits out for the first part of Cactus League play, but I think he'll be able to put this all in the rear view from what we know right now. I finished up our team roundup series last Friday, which is where we take in-depth looks at all 30 teams once the season is over and provide like fantasy analysis on certain aspects of what went down. And you know, one of the fantasy slants in that article for the Dodgers was sort of being surprised in retrospect that Bellinger went fourth overall in the average fantasy draft for 2020. That was ahead of teammate Mookie Betts, who just finished second to Freddie Freeman for National League MVP. Bellinger had a 789 OPS in 56 regular season games this summer, so that was before the shoulder injury. It's not the greatest sample size, obviously, and we've talked about how to look at these weird 2020 numbers, and we're going to continue to talk about how to analyze those numbers. But it was, you know, nonetheless well short of his 2019 production. So how far does he fall in drafts next spring into the second round, like middle of the second round? I guess it's all kind of pending on how the shoulder rehab goes. But I think right now I'd put him like pick number 13, 14.
Some of the early mocks I've seen him basically late first rounder, kind of fringy late first round, early second round. I think pending what we hear, you know, going into spring training and how he might look, I'd say probably middle of the second round as of right now. That could change, you know, if he looks great in the spring, obviously. And there's a chance to kind of make some profit on that if he is in the second round, as opposed to this year where, you know, it was hard to top what he did in 2019. Yeah. You know what I mean? So he's still going to be in a great lineup. He's in a great situation there with the Dodgers. So I think there's a relatively safe floor there. We also have to remember this past season, he messed with his swing and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So, and that was strange that happened to begin with. So probably just a lot of mixed messages in his head, kind of a little bit mixed up. But no doubt he has the talent to bounce back, and he's in a great situation. But it is kind of just a wait and see, I think, with him. I don't think he's not a lock first round pick anymore.
Yeah, he's top 15 guy still, though, and that's no slight. He runs a little bit, but not enough to make a huge impact in stolen bases.
The batting average is likely to be up and down.
Yeah, you really need the power to come through, and there's a lot of power on the board.
So let's bounce over to the pitching side. We have quite a few things to get to here. And a surprise this week. We actually did hear that the Padres and Mike Clevinger were talking about a multi-year deal to buy out the final 2 years of his arbitration. This was last week that we heard that. And then there was a tweet that came out from the Padres. And this was Monday night that was like, yes, we've signed Mike Clevinger to a 2-year contract. And by the way, he also underwent Tommy John surgery and will miss the entire 2021 season. And that's just rough news, obviously, for the Padres, given, you know, the trade they made with the Indians this past season. Of course, you know, dealt with that injury toward the end of the regular season. So, you know, the Padres put together this team to go on this deep October run, and then you don't even have Mike Clevinger, who's supposed to be basically leading your rotation, was only able to make one postseason start. And I think he only threw one inning in that game against the Dodgers before leaving with the injury there. And it seemed like something, at least the last time that we heard prior to this report, was that it was something that, you know, he was going to be fine, you know, going into 2021. So obviously quite the shock there. And also with Dinelson Lamet, he didn't pitch at all in the postseason due to biceps tightness. So suddenly this team is looking a little shaky going into next season, because you don't know what you're going to get from Lamet. You know, you're not going to have Clevinger. Chris Paddock has a lot of talent, but only two pitches right now and kind of needs to figure that out. You can't count on necessarily Zach Davies being the pitcher he was this year. There's a lot of talent, young talent there. Mackenzie Gore, you know, most prominent among them. But at this point with Clevinger, yeah, they'll have him back in 2022, but it'll be his second Tommy John surgery. And those aren't always a sure thing for pitchers to come back from a second Tommy John surgery. So 2022 is a question for him. But as for 2021 with the Padres, like, do they need to make a move for another starting pitcher now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. And, you know, Padres GM AJ Preller said when the team acquired Clevinger from the Indians that the move was about making three pennant runs. So one's down and they lost in the NLDS to the Dodgers. There won't be a pennant run involving Clevinger in 2021. I'm sure the Dodgers will generally be a competitive team. And then we'll have to see about 2022. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. They have Mackenzie Gore on the way, Luis Patino. They've got some young arms, but like you said, Paddock still needs to show us a little something. Lamet with the biceps. I think it would probably be smart for them to try to get a guy like Drew Smyly, honestly, who we're going to talk about in a second. One of those like mid-tier free agent starters, or maybe try to use some of that young talent to acquire a starter.
Garrett Richards is a free agent too, so that's another starter that they, you know, that they've lost. So I think they need to add a starter at this point. I know Trevor Bauer's kind of like advertised himself to the Padres too. I don't think they're going to go there, but no, with all these young players, you know, they might have a little bit of flexibility to do that. We'll see. But, you know, you think they want to keep some of them long term too, so they might want to, you know, lock up some of those guys long term and don't want to give too much to Bauer right now. But we'll see.
If Clevinger doesn't sign that extension and he needs the Tommy John surgery, do you think the Padres consider non-tendering him this winter? Like, that would, I mean, it would make the trade a real nightmare. It might still be a nightmare with the way it played out.
You know, when I heard the report last week about them talking about the 2-year deal, like in the back of my mind, I was thinking like, I wonder what's happening here. Like, is there a reason why Clevinger's motivated to do this right now? Like, does he want to lock in some certainty? Is there some things going on behind the scenes? Like, it was like my gut feeling. And now it sort of came to fruition that way. So I guess Clevinger is protecting himself on the chance that maybe he isn't the same when he comes back, but do we know the numbers on that contract yet?
I think it was $11.5 million. So okay. $5 million next year, $3 million of that is a signing bonus that gets deferred, and then $6.5 million for 2022. And yeah, I mean, I agree. When you hear about he's already under control for 2 more years and they're only talking about a 2-year deal, like usually there's at least one other year tacked onto that, maybe another year and an option. So clearly he didn't have much leverage. Right. And obviously we know why now.
Yep, exactly.
So yeah, certainly the Clevinger news caught a lot of people off guard this week. Another bit of news that caught people off guard is who I just talked about, Drew Smyly signing with the Braves on a 1-year, $11 million free agent deal. This was after he made just 5 starts and 2 relief appearances for the Giants in 2020. And in a financial landscape where no team wants to pick up Brad Hand for $10 million, it's just a little surprising that Smyly could land $11 million guaranteed. And so early into what's probably going to be a really rough offseason for players, you know, it's a fairly low-risk 1-year deal, but it is $11 million. The Braves obviously see something here that was worthy of that level of aggressiveness. Smiley missed both 2017 and 2018 due to an elbow issue that eventually led to Tommy John surgery, and then struggled to a 6.24 ERA in 114 innings between the Rangers and Phillies in 2019. Also missed time this summer with a left index finger strain. But when he returned to the Giants off the injured list this past September, something clicked. The velocity was way up. The spin rate on his curveball was way up. And with all that came a huge improvement in strikeout rate and walk rate. Finished the condensed season with a 3.42 ERA, 1.10 whip, and 42 strikeouts to just 9 walks in 26 and a third total innings. The durability questions still linger. Smiley hasn't stayed healthy for a full season since 2016 when he was with the Rays. But, you know, we could look back on this deal as being pretty brilliant in its aggressiveness, given the lack of high-impact starting pitchers available in free agency. You throw him into a rotation there in Atlanta with Max Fried, Ian Anderson, Kyle Wright, and hopefully Mike Soroka as he works his way back from a torn Achilles tendon. It's a lot of high upside arms, with Smiley being the veteran of the bunch at age 31. The other four are age 26 or under. So I think the Braves feel good about having a set rotation to pair with that offense that was, you know, first in Major League Baseball in a lot of categories last season.
Yeah, we'll see if the Braves can bring back Marcell Ozuna. I have my doubts about that, you know, after the kind of season that he had. But remember the Braves last year, they were really active early in the offseason as well. You know, adding Travis d'Arnaud, adding Cole Hamels. I think they locked in Tyler Flowers, you know, as a backup there for d'Arnaud early too. So, you know, not necessarily out of character for them. And, you know, if they really like a player, you know, or if you really like a player, like, go out and get them, you know what I mean? And certainly Smiley showed these improvements this past season. You know, the Braves, they signed Hamels and got basically nothing out of him. So, and they're paying Smiley $11 million. They gave Hamels $16 million last year and didn't really get anything out of that. They're not really paying any of their starters much money. They also, you know, you look at the deals for like Ozzie Albies, you know, Ronald Acuña Jr. Like, they're getting bargains there too. So I mean, there should be tons of wiggle room to add upside to this team. And I really like the Smiley deal, even though, you know, in a vacuum with, you know, like what you were saying with Brad Hand, it is a little strange because Hand is so much more proven. So it's weird, but I do like the upside there potentially.
Charlie Morton is who I thought of. Like, could he be gotten for $11 million too? Like, would that be a better fit for Atlanta, or is that almost like redoing the Cole Hamels situation?
It's a good point. And I think looking at like MLB trade rumors, you know, they do their predictions for signings. And I think they had 1 year, $8 million for Charlie Morton at the start of the off season. And now I think we might have to adjust, you know, the market rate. I think this could be setting the market for those like mid rotation or better starters.
That's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah. That's a good thing for the players. And nice to see that. So we're going to do a little promo here. The all new RotoWorld premium subscription packages have the tools and resources you need to dominate your fantasy leagues from drafts through the playoffs. Best of all, subscriptions are not just one sport. They include football, baseball, basketball, and hockey. And as a listener of the RotoWorld Baseball podcast, you can get $10 off an annual subscription to RotoWorld Premium. To find your edge, visit rotoworld.com/edge using the promo code BBPOD10 at checkout. Again, it's rotoworld.com/edge and use our promo code BBPOD10 at checkout.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
So just to give a little more background on this pitching market and how things are going so far. Last week, qualifying offer decisions were due. There were only six of them, I believe, this year. But Marcus Stroman and Kevin Gausman were the only ones to accept those qualifying offers. 1 year, $18.9 million. Marcus Stroman with the Mets, Kevin Gausman with the Giants. And I guess Gausman, and we talked about this at the time, that it wasn't particularly surprising that he would accept, given his inconsistent track record and just that high salary for 1 year. It just made sense for him to take it. I think we all expected that. Stroman was a little trickier since he has that steady track record of success. But then again, he didn't pitch this year. Had the calf tear, then ultimately opted out of the season over concerns due to COVID-19. But, certainly a good thing for the Mets to lock in Stroman here. I think that was something that Mets fans were hoping for, that he would stick around for 1 year just to stabilize that rotation, which was such an issue beyond Jacob deGrom and David Peterson to a degree. You know, maybe they get Noah Syndergaard back a couple of months into the 2021 season, but this really jump-started their offseason in a positive way. And Stroman even said, you know, seeing the press conference that Steve Cohen had and Sandy Alderson, you know, maybe he already decided to stay, who knows, but, you know, just an extra stamp of approval there. He was really impressed. And so it's good to see. And, you know, Stroman's a local guy too. I think it's a good situation for him as well, especially if they end up getting Francisco Lindor, improving that defense behind him. We know Stroman pitches to a little more contact, gets a lot of ground balls, but I think he's going to be a quality starter there for the Mets to lock in there. Gausman had a great year, the Giants. Someone I feel like we've been waiting for forever to put together a full season, you know, since his prospect days and the early part of his career with the Orioles. So really stays in a good situation there in San Francisco. I know it's not as pitcher friendly as it once was, but still a good location for a pitcher. So if he puts together a full season like he was doing this past year, you know, he could cash in big next offseason.
Yeah, Stroman and Gausman probably could have done better than $18.9 million overall, but I don't think either would have touched that number on an average annual value basis. So they accept the big one-year payday and put themselves in position to reach free agency again next winter in what will hopefully be a far better financial landscape for players and baseball and the world in general.
Yeah. So with those guys off the board, the top starters, and this is according to Matthew Poliat's top 111 list, Trevor Bauer, obviously number one, we know that, but you know, with Stroman and Gausman off the board here, you know, Masahiro Tanaka is likely next up. I find it hard to believe he's going to leave the Yankees, but I guess we'll see. Charlie Morton, I think there's just some sort of mixed opinions about where he is at this point in his career. Kind of disappointing this past season. Jake Odorizzi, James Paxton, an upside play. Taijuan Walker, Jose Quintana, Anthony DeSclafani, J.A. Happ, Corey Kluber is another maybe upside play. Garrett Richards, great stuff, but you know, inconsistent. So that's kind of what you got at this point. I think there's a lot of like mid-rotation type of guys, but I think they all fit, you know, I'd say from Paxton on down in that sort of Smiley range where it's, you know, $11 million per maybe. I think Kluber probably has to settle for less, but a lot of those other guys, I think they're going to be in that same general area.
Now, we've heard just you and I do a lot of Roto World news shifts, and it seems like every few days there's a Japanese or Korean pitcher who's who's either going to be posted or talking about coming over to Major League Baseball. I wonder if they're aware that the starting pitching market is so thin and that this might be the winter to actually make that move.
Yeah, Tomoyuki Sugano, I think, is like the big name everybody's watching. Probably the best pitcher in the world who's not in Major League Baseball right now. We'll have to see if he ends up being posted. There's a lot of speculation that that will happen. So we'll see. I think the posting period already began last weekend.
Yeah, I think it has to be done by like Thanksgiving Day, I believe.
Right, and then there's like a 30-day window if a player is posted. So, you know, there's going to be movement on that pretty soon. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. And I've seen, you know, because of the restrictions due to COVID, teams not having that ability to go overseas and scout, you know, some of the teams that are always prominent with these, you know, Japanese, Korean players, you know, Yankees, Dodgers, Mariners, Angels. Mm-hmm. I think those are kind of the teams we're going to hear connected to someone like Sugano.
And then maybe the first big move of the hot stove season that we haven't covered yet on this podcast was the Blue Jays re-signing Robbie Ray to a 1-year, $8 million deal. That was back on November 7th. Ray is a well-known figure to anyone who's played fantasy baseball over the last 6-7 years. High strikeout rate guy with poor control, prone to some really bad outings and some really good outings. And that's pretty much exactly what he was in 2020 between the Diamondbacks and Blue Jays, mostly bad. Got traded to Toronto or Buffalo at the August 31st deadline. Finished with an overall 6.62 ERA, 68 strikeouts in 51-plus innings, but also 45 walks. Had a 1.90 whip. His numbers did improve after the trade, and I think the Blue Jays will bank on that continuing. The swing and miss stuff has always been intriguing, and maybe if this were a longer season, the rate stats would have evened out somewhat, get that ERA at least into the fives or maybe down into like the high fours. The Blue Jays feel pretty good about their position player core, as they should, and it sounds like they might even pursue another bat. They've been tied to George Springer, but they want to be able to put together a pitching staff that supports the position player talent and rounds the roster into – a legitimate contender. I kind of forgot the Blue Jays were in the playoffs this year. when they were talking about Charlie Montoyo for AL Manager of the Year, I was like, oh, yeah. there was the expanded field of playoff entrance, and they got swept in two wild card series games by the eventual AL champs, the Rays. But the Blue Jays, they're on the cusp of legit contention, and Ray has the ability to pitch like a number three, maybe even number two starter when everything's going right and he's limiting the walks. That's just always been the big thing. Ross Stripling is back. He was another August 31 deadline addition for Toronto. And Hyunjin Ryu is the established ace entering the second year of a 4-year, $80 million deal. Nate Pearson could be a post-type guy in fantasy. He looked excellent in his one postseason appearance after returning from that flexor strain that cost him much of the year. Tanner Roark had a terrible season, but maybe he can bounce back, or maybe the Jays push him into long relief and sign or trade for another starter, maybe someone from Japan or Korea. I think they have the makings of a pretty decent staff, and then we know the lineup should be good and getting better with its youth.
Yeah, I'm skeptical about Robbie Ray, you know, in the AL East and, you know, all those ballparks over a full season. You know, if they can figure something out mechanically, I feel like every team kind of feels that way. Like, you know, if we can find him and get him right, you know, maybe he can be a number one, number two type of starter. You know, for the sum that they're going to end up paying him, I think it's worth a shot. But I do think it caught some people off guard, especially that it happened this quickly. I think they need to add at least another starting pitcher. Matt Shoemaker is a free agent. You know, when healthy, he's pretty interesting too. I'd be interested to see if they reunite as well. But you know, hopefully they'll aim a little bit higher, but we'll have to see how that goes. But I think the biggest surprise was just that it happened so quickly.
Right. They really liked Ray. I mean, you read glowing reports from all of their front office guys on Zoom, and they really liked what he brought to the team. And I don't know, maybe he did pitch a lot better in Toronto than he did starting out in Arizona. So maybe they have clued into something that can help him be more successful.
Right. So next week is Thanksgiving. It'll probably be the slowest week of the offseason calendar, if I had to guess. We may see some like front office activity. You know, maybe the Phillies and the Mets want to figure this out before, you know, what would normally be the winter meetings. It's going to be fascinating to see what kind of track this offseason has, since there isn't going to be that sort of like forced interaction of the winter meetings. Like, how is this going to work out?
Right, exactly.
I have no idea, man.
I don't know. I mean, I think the leaks are going to be slow. I don't think we're going to get as many rumors, but I'm kind of done predicting what's going to happen in the year 2020. I never would have thought that this week would have so many headlines. We got like an hour long show out of it.
What's interesting, you know, I'm Mets centric right now, but you know, Steve Cohen is like the most interesting variable in baseball right now, because he didn't lose money with the team this year. He didn't own a team this year. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He could say, I'm going to sign Trevor Bauer this week just because I want to. You know what I mean? Like, and that could really kickstart everything. Like, you just never know what's going to happen there. Like, what if he does sign DJ LeMahieu away from the Yankees, and the Yankees are like, well, we got to do something. Like, so many things could happen, and it could happen at any time. And I think that's what's going to make this offseason so strange, is that there is kind of that, I guess, advantage to an owner who actually wants to spend money to win.
I think you've got Steve Cohen derangement syndrome.
I'm on cloud nine right now.
Well, I guess going from the Wilpons to Steve Cohen, it's like swinging a weighted bat. I'm happy for you. I hope it works out well.
I shouldn't be this happy on a day that, you know, one of the most productive hitters for the team got suspended for PEDs, but here we are.
Yeah.
So 2020 is a weird year, to say the least. But I think that's all we have for this week. If you like what you're hearing with the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review if you don't mind. Follow us on Twitter if you don't already. I'm at DJ Short. Drew is at Drew Silv. Be safe out there, and we'll see you next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.